Alright, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all right. Today we've got a fantastic interview, if I do say so myself, with a legendary figure from the UK TV and radio scene and someone who was instrumental in the early days of Oasis, which is Gary Crowley. Really excited to speak to Gary. Fantastic interview, all talking about various things, including the fact he's got a new CD out based on a 90s indie music, and it's really, really good. So I'm going to be talking to him about that and his run-ins with Oasis and various things. So that is going to be excellent. Also, I just wanted to pick up on as well the Liam Gallagher film, Nebworth 22, is out. Just a very quick review of that here, and then give my first initial thoughts, and then we're going to do a longer piece, probably jump on and do like a joint call with a few of you or something once everyone's had a chance to see it. But yeah, my initial thought was that I really enjoyed it. Personally, I would have had more Nebworth and less build up and other stuff. I actually looked at my watch when Liam got on stage at Nebworth, and it was exactly 1 hour in. It started bang on 8 o'clock, and it was 9 o'clock when Liam actually hit the stage. I thought, wow, that was... So I was thinking, okay, these sort of bits with the contributors and all the build-up of seeing the set list, seeing the sound check and seeing the rehearsals and all that, it's all good and interesting stuff. But I'd like to see the show, you know? And then when the show started, it was quite obvious. It was like, okay, these are all quite trimmed down versions of the songs. You know, yeah, there's no Oasis songs, and yeah, that's a shame. It maybe would have been nice to hear Oasis songs. I think just hearing Liam's songs actually pointed out, like, wow, what a, you know, he has got some excellent songs, you know, and that was really did them focus on the fact it was all about him. But yeah, the fact they were all trimmed, it's like, oh, okay. And then they did, if you stuck around after the credits, which most people in my screening, it didn't, because it started dead on. And a load of people like turned up at like 10 past, which is, I suppose, when you normally turn up if you want to miss the adverts. But there was no adverts. It just started. And so therefore, all these people that had missed the message at the start saying, stay tuned after the credits. And then they left and they missed out on seeing a couple of tunes. So sod them, basically. But yeah, so that I thought was a shame, although the Nebworth live show is going to be, the full live is apparently going to be released. So we're going to get to see that. But personally, if there was two screenings, you know, the documentary with an hour's worth of build up and fan stories, or the concert, I would have just gone to see the concert. You know, that was really what I was interested in. And all that other stuff would be fantastic kind of behind the scenes footage for a DVD, but wasn't necessarily for me vital to kind of see on the big screen. Not to say that I didn't enjoy it. I really enjoyed all of the individual stories. I thought John, who was on the last episode of the podcast, was fantastic. It was great to see. And also, you know, obviously, knowing him a little bit now, hey, there's John, which is cool. Adrina is just absolutely a ray of sunshine, and it's so, you know, so lovely. And it was really nice for her to get to go and get the tambourine at the end. It was fantastic. The Belgian girl, I thought she was brilliant. You know, and what I really loved is having seen all their little stories, then when you're actually watching the concert, when you catch them in the crowd, so you're like, oh, there's the Belgian girl. Oh, there's Adrina. You know, it was really nice because you then, you're then like, oh, I know them. And I always do that from like when you're watching other Oasis concerts and like you see people in the crowd and you think, I wonder who they are. Like, I wonder what their story was. And actually, you know, we do know their story a little bit. You had Simon at the Champagne Supernova, which was good. I would like to have heard more from the Japanese guys. They were very entertaining. All of that, I liked all of it. But as I said, given the choice, I probably would have just gone for the concert, really, and have that stuff as like DVD extras. All of the build-up stuff I thought was fine. I think there was a lot of crossover with what we've already seen in the Nebworth documentary, when we're talking about all the history of Nebworth and everything. And then also in the As It Was documentary, all of like, oh, well, Liam was struggling and he'd been out of the limelight for a while. So all that sort of stuff. I was like, well, we've seen this in As It Was and in Nebworth, the Oasis one. So I thought that was sort of a bit redundant. I thought it was funny that obviously when they'd made it, Liz Truss was prime minister. So when they were talking about, you know, the country now, and it's focused on Liz Truss, and it's like, wow, this is going to be one of those things that we look back on and go, wait, who was that blonde woman? Oh, yeah, she was the one that was prime minister for about 25 minutes. So, I thought that was interesting. I thought generally it was shot really well. I like the fact they didn't mess about too much. You know, it wasn't loads of montages and craziness. It was pretty much, you know, it was beautifully shot. The drone footage and stuff was really cool. But I think it sort of just focused and, you know, you could just watch it quite comfortably. It didn't do your head in, sort of thing. And then similarly with the Nebworth footage, like I said, the only thing that sort of was a bit annoying was that the fact they chopped down certain songs. You know, I would have just rather heard more full songs. You know, then you get more of a clear picture of the actual show. A bit more in between song chat and things like that would have been better. No mention of Bonehead. I thought that was a shame because, you know, that was a big deal on the day, and the fact that he couldn't play and Little Barry was there, you know, that could have been a part of it. It was nice that we heard from a couple of guys in Liam's band, but only two of them. Or was it Christian and Mike? Actually, it would have been nice to hear from Jay and Drew and Little Barry. You know, him coming in for Bonehead, what difference did that make? All that sort of stuff, that would have been interesting, but no discussion of that. I thought Liam's manager, Sam, came across really well. It would have been nice to hear a bit more from Debbie. Lovely that one moment, you brief moment you had of Liam helping Peggy out of the helicopter was nice, but it would have been a bit nice to have more from Peggy. And Liam's interviews I thought was fun. I think he was on good form and he was sort of, you know, came out with a few zingers. But I suppose I'm unfairly comparing it to Moon Age Daydream, the David Bowie film that I saw recently. And that really was inspiring about how incredible an artist David Bowie was. And if you try and compare Liam to Bowie, I mean, Liam is just so single-minded, straight, you know, he basically has one thing to say, which is just go out there and do it and put on a great show. And if you don't like it, fuck off. That's basically all he has to say. There's no other artistic vision or idea or something. So, and that's fine. And that's why we love him. But actually, you know, it makes for a slightly less appealing kind of interviews when he doesn't really have that much to say. So while I liked all that stuff and it was nice hearing a bit more from Liam, it was a little bit lacking in that regard.
Fucking hell, it's big, Debs. Fucking try to do with me. It's gonna come on your nose thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's fucking massive.
You were watching yourself, where would you watch in the field?
Oh, I'd be at the bar, mate. They're getting fucking wankered just going, check him out there and no.
I've heard people go, oh, you never go back to Nebworth. Once it's done, it's done. It's like, well, I do, you fucking shitbags.
Oh, and the final thing I'll say, the fact it pops up at the start, the Talk Tonight podcast, and it's the little bit from the trailer when he's like, you know, Liam's voice is never going to carry at Nebworth. And I thought, oi, you're including the Talk Tonight podcast. You haven't included my podcast, you bastards. But then I suppose what they're doing there is getting a, you know, a dissenting voice. And while probably we've had podcasts that did express some concerns about the Nebworth thing, yeah, it would have been nice to have been included. If they were going to include a podcast, then ours would have been nice to include. I do get it. And actually, if they had included a little bit of me sort of saying I didn't think Nebworth was a good idea or something, then I probably would have been a bit gutted about that. And actually, the guy from the Talk Tonight podcast who's featured, then when it did come up in the trailer, he then did like a whole episode sort of backtracking on it and sort of saying, oh, I didn't mean it. I kind of, you know, I love Liam. I really do. So, yeah, so I think he sort of felt the brunt of it a little bit. But anyway, yeah, well worth watching. I did really enjoy it. I'll be buying the DVD. I'll watch the documentary part again a couple of times, but it's not going to be on regular rotation. The main thing for me will be the concert when that comes out, because that'll be really, really worth watching. And yeah, it just finally, it reminded me, if you've watched Welcome to Wrexham, the documentary with the fact that Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney bought Wrexham Football Club, really good documentary on Disney Plus. Sort of covers that whole season of them, how they did, you know, buying the club and then and all the ups and downs of both the football team and then also in the dealing with the people in the city. And that sort of focuses on certain people in the city. Like there's the guy that runs the local pub, and there's all these people that you sort of focus on throughout. And that was kind of, that had a similar feel for me to this. And I thought that was really interesting. But anyway, that's a side point. Right, so that's what I thought of it. Let me know what you think, and keep an eye on social media, because I may well be jumping on to do like a group call to discuss it at some point in the very near future. Anyway, without any more Freddie ado from me, we are going to pass over now to my interview with the legendary Gary Crowley. This is a matter. Congrats on the release of your new CD. I know it's a series that you've done, but this one's focused on the 90s. So this was a very special period for me, obviously, but a special one for you as well?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, when I was putting the track listing together, James, and writing the sleeve notes, I was just reminded, really, how lucky I was. Because I started the decade presenting a Sunday afternoon show on a great radio station called Greater London Radio, GLR for short. And as well as doing that, I was also doing a bit of A&R consultancy for Island Records. And then fast forward a couple of years, then I was handed this late night music TV program to present, a kind of music magazine show called The Beat, which actually was only ever meant to last for a couple of months, James, but actually kept on getting extended and extended, ended up running for about 3 years. And of course, that's where I first met Noel and Liam for the first time in a record shop on Denmark Street, just before they went off to do the sound check for a gig at the Marquee. This is the Marquee when it had moved to Charing Cross Road. Sure. And then fast forward a couple of more years, I was presenting the mid-morning show on XFM. So it was a really, really exciting decade for me. And I've got very, very fond memories of most of it, really. And most importantly, I think, you know, a very exciting time as far as, you know, what was happening as far as music was concerned, and very eclectic, very diverse. I mean, not too dissimilar, I think, to the 80s, really. So, you know, that's why it was important for me to do this, and why I was thankful that, you know, the fella at the record company, a fella called Anthony Broser at Wienerwill, said yes to it.
Excellent. No, I mean, it's really great. And I love CDs. You know, I'm that generation, and it's so nice. I still wish that, you know, the bands, especially the likes of Liam and Noel and stuff, were still putting out CDs now, CD singles, you know, because especially, you know, Oasis did such a great job with the CD singles, you know, with the B-sides, and you could just sit them so nicely on your shelf together. And I think that's a real shame that they don't do that anymore. There was something so special about the CD single, even personally for me, more than vinyl, because, you know, you ended up getting two or three good songs often, and they just looked nice to, on the shelf. You know what I mean? I think we've really missed that now with downloading and streaming.
Most definitely. I mean, you know, perhaps that's another discussion for another day. The way that we access, you know, music now, you know, the pluses, the minuses. But I completely, wholeheartedly agree with you as far as CDs are concerned. I mean, I've certainly, much to my other half's annoyance, I've still kept a lot of mine that I've accumulated over the years. And the nice thing, James, with these box sets is that you know, there is that sort of sense of a journey, if you like, a ride, I mean, I've done four now, and you know, a couple of them have been three CD sets, two of them have been three of them have been three CD sets, and the next one is going to be a four CD set. But this one, you know, this one, hopefully, you know, it gives you a sense of, you know, the different kind of musical strands that were, you know, that was sort of, you know, kind of going on as far as the 90s were concerned, you know, that kind of cross fertilization thing as well. But just one more thing, James, about the CD box set is, you know, just putting a lot of thought into, you know, the packaging with all of these that I've done, and where I think, you know, I've been very, very lucky, James, is that I've kept up, you know, friendships with, you know, a lot of the artists that that I would have been playing all those years ago. So, you know, once, you know, I was told that, you know, we'd got a track cleared by the Wonder Staff or Saint Etienne or Dodgy, you know, I could sort of go to, you know, Miles or Sarah or Matthew from Dodgy and say, listen, we've got this track cleared for this compilation. Would you be up for giving me a memory of the times? You know, it's all very me, you know, very well me kind of waxing lyrical about how I remember it, but how do you remember it? Sure. And we've got some really, really nice memories. You know, those three, Paul Weller's given us a terrific memory, James, and also a lovely tribute to, you know, the late, great Andrew Weatherall, who's... Yeah. Influence, I think, can be felt across this compilation. Alan McGee's given us a, you know, a terrific memory as well, a vivid memory. So it just hopefully sort of helps to make, you know, the whole thing, the finished package, if you like, you know, a little bit more special. I hope so.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think so, especially when you've got, you know, because these days, obviously, everything's out there, you know, whether it's Spotify or YouTube, you know, it's there's so much accessibility. But then for me personally, what I loved about this is discovering a lot of tracks that I either didn't know or hadn't heard for years, you know, and so it's really lovely. I know it's called, like, you know, bangers, classics and curveballs, isn't it? And there's a real nice mix of that. So you've got, you know, you've got the big tunes. Well, I would call them really big tunes, I suppose, maybe if people don't know the era as well, and maybe not, like Jailbird by Primal Scream and For the Dead by Gene and all these fantastic songs. But then there's things that, yeah, that I was like, oh yeah, I think I remember hearing that on the evening session, you know, but it was something I just haven't heard for ages. So, I mean, was it tricky to kind of decide how many, you know, how many do you go for, like the bigger songs from the bigger sort of the Britpop names, and how many more of the sort of the lesser known people that maybe didn't sort of quite have that significant a breakthrough?
Well, I wanted to do something a little bit different with this collection, the Indie 90s playback one, James, than what we'd done with the Lost 80s and also the very first GC Punk and New Wave collection, which was more on the, you know, big names, but the less obvious tracks, you know, whether it was a B-side or whether it was an album track that I felt could have been or should have been a single, and also, you know, the lesser known names. So with this one, you know, I just thought that, you know, we could do sort of something slightly different, and you know, so CD1 is basically the classics, but, you know, hopefully some of the less obvious, you know, classics. I mean, Soul Family Sensations, I don't even know if I should call you baby, is a track that, you know, has been, you know, mentioned and picked up by a lot of people. The soundtrack of our lives, talking of Oasis, of course, you know, I think they fair to say that you know, they were one of Noel's favourite bands for a couple of years. Who else? The Stairs, the Drop 19s. That track were known. It was a massive, massive song for me and you know, my producer and also my program assistant back on GLR. You know, back in the 90s, the Curveballs sort of does what it says on the tin. You know, so it's tracks like the Montgomery Cliffs, Lovesville, USA, who were a you know, a five-piece band from Bristol, who I saw, you know, I only saw them once actually, but I loved their album. The Katydids are on there, who won the Demo Clash, as you know, Dodgy are on there as well with Lovebirds. Molly Halfhead are one of those bands that I always loved Paul Bardsley's voice, very, very distinctive vocal tones, and always felt that they should have been bigger. That Credit to the Nation track, Call It What You Want, you know, with the Nirvana sample, is one that, you know, got a lot of love. And you know, CD3 bangers, well, you know, again, that title sort of says it all, really. You know, the emphasis, I guess, on the dance floor, and, you know, just that sort of cross fertilization that was going on between, for want of a better term, alternative indie bands, you know, but some of the, you know, the kind of dancier groups as well, you know, and remixers. So, you know, fingers crossed, it kind of gives people you know, a flavor of you know, what was going on, you know, back in the you know, back in the 90s.
No, absolutely. And one of the things I think is really interesting is so much focus, obviously being a, you know, Britpop account, and there's so much Britpop sort of stuff, that so much focus goes on those specific bands, and then that you forget about people like Jesus Jones and, you know, Sultans of Ping, and, you know, and a lot of these bands that did really well, you know, had top 20 hits and things, you know, and maybe even had more success than some of the bands that made it in Britpop, but just haven't, kind of, maybe because they weren't part of a scene that is then talked about so much, they just don't get talked about as much. So I think it was really nice to shine a light on a lot of those.
No, that's a very, very good point. That's a very good point. I can remember, you know, almost as if it was yesterday, hearing Info Freako by Jesus Jones for the very, very first time, and it just, you know, completely, utterly blowing my head off. I mean, you know, really couldn't wait to get into the studio on a Sunday afternoon to play it. In fact, you know, I mean, they're on the compilation. Big Audio Dynamite are also on the compilation, or Big Audio Dynamite 2, I should say. And just Jones always sort of, you know, kind of reminded me a little bit of Big Audio Dynamite, and that sort of, you know, that kind of winning mix of you know, great songs, but also sort of utilizing, you know, the kind of technology of the time, you know, with samplers and that kind of thing. So no, you make a good point there. I think that they don't get the you know, the kind of respect that's probably sort of due to them, really.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting to me that people often talk about the sort of the mid-90s as sort of harkening back to the 60s psychedelia, but you really hear in these early 90s tracks, you know, with the multiple harmony vocals and things like that, that they had that, there was really that influence, that psychedelic influence was there coming off of Loaded. You can even hear it in like the electronic track on here. That was definitely there. Even the early like Ocean Colour scene, you know, they've got that. But then also with the production, because you had this dance music, the Andrew Weatherall influence, etc., that was really there. It was a real time capsule, I think, about that era. But yeah, it's interesting.
Do you know what, James? It's interesting. Thinking back to the late 80s. I kind of was sort of straddling, really, you know, going to see bands at the time, doing a little bit of A&R consultancy for kind of Island Records. It's funny, actually, two bands who we didn't get clearances for this compilation, but who knows, if there's another one, maybe we will. There was two bands that we tried to sign at the time, but for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. One being 5:30 and the other being the Charlatans. So, the point that I'm sort of trying to make is that, you know, a lot of sort of very exciting groups kind of coming through, towards the end of the 1980s. But also it was very, very exciting as far as, you know, clubs were concerned. And, there was a club that I've got a vivid memory of going to, you know, a good few times, and some of the splinter clubs that came off it. But I'm talking about the Zoom Club, which was, a little club that was started by Danny Ramplin and his other half, Journey, which had this sort of terrific, kind of anything goes musical sort of policy. So it was, you know, this fantastic kind of acid house, you know, house tracked, but you know, you'd also kind of hear things like the Thrashing Doves, who had a fantastic track called Jesus on the Payroll, and you'd hear John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance. I mean, it was just this sort of anything sort of goes kind of approach, really. And I think that DJs like Andy Weatherall and Steve Proctor, who's also on here with his remix of the Railway Children's Music Stop, as well as Terry Farley. I mean, the list goes on and on. There was this kind of, this cross-fertilization kind of going on, really. And I found it very, very exciting. That kind of late 80s, early 90s period. It's funny, I compiled an album at the time with my pal Tony Smith, James, called Happy Days, which I think hopefully seemed to have kind of sort of caught that kind of time when for want of a better description, the kind of indie alternative bands kind of came out of their bedrooms and went down to the local club, if you like, it was an exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, and leading on to obviously the Oasis side of it, it was an exciting time as they then come through in 94. And yeah, you mentioned it briefly earlier, but yeah, I believe it's their first ever TV appearance or the first ever TV interview anyway, is yourself.
I think you're right in saying that. I think that it was the first interview. I think that they'd already done a performance. I think Joe Wiley, famously, who was the researcher on the Word, had booked him for a performance. But I think the very first national interview was the one that we did. And you do not forget, James, meeting Noel and Liam for the first time. They were such a breath of fresh air. Our filming days, James, used to be a Wednesday, and get up very, very early on a Wednesday morning, kind of go into town to sort of meet the crew, our TV crew. The first interview of the day was always the opening link to the programme, which was the one that people seem to remember, the walking around in circles link. And Yeah, I mean, I've got a memory of sort of looking at the call sheet that day, and I'd already, I'd already would have been playing Colombia, which was which was put round by their their radio and TV promotions company, and loving that. So yeah, Colombia was a big favourite on the Sunday afternoon show, and got a memory of Dylan White, and he's someone that you should sort of think about interviewing for this, because Dylan was the band's radio plugger. So Dylan would have been the fellow who would have gone, would have come to see me, would have gone to see Steve Lamacq or Mark Goodger, whoever was, Joe Wiley, whoever's presenting the evening show at the time, and actually, put that record in their hand. So, I was aware of the band. We were beginning to sort of, obviously kind of read about them. I wasn't sort of sure, what to expect if the truth be told. I can remember from what I'd read about them in the music papers that that they were cocky and they had a sort of a kind of swagger and attitude to them, and they didn't disappoint. We interviewed them in a guitar shop on Denmark Street, and they were just funny, cheeky, sort of irreverent. I mean, you could tell that they were enjoying it as much as I was. I mean, if you look at the clip, which is up on YouTube, and I think it's had something like, just under 200,000 views or something, you can see that I'm really, really, really enjoying it, but they really, really are as well.
Noel and Liam from Oasis, right. Thanks for interrupting your hectic schedule, even, and taking time out and meeting up with us. Let's talk about how you lot got signed initially, because you didn't have to sort of go through the old sending out the demo tapes, did you?
No. We got signed by fate, It's one of them.
But they dropped us after the first single that never come out, and then Jason signed us.
Well, what was the story?
Fate Records.
What was the story with Creation? Because Alan McGee saw you.
Well, in the beginning, Gary, right, there was a big bang from the sun. Apparently it was so gases and stuff, and then these things crawled out of the sea and turned into monkeys, which then turned into men,
which then turned into wolf.
And then everything was all right.
Picked up some guitars.
Until Man United won the double.
No, right. Let's be serious now, right? Yeah. You come with a gig, yeah, right.
And didn't you like hijack the gig though?
No, we didn't. We didn't. No, we went there like normal people just to go to do a gig, and a good time about it. And then some bloke goes, "Oh, you're not. Who were you?" I'm like, "The Oasis, mate." And he's like, "Oh, I'm never there." I was like, "Yeah, no." No one has, He's like, right, and you're not playing. He was like, but you said we could play. Someone said it was sorted. Then he said we couldn't. And then he was like, right, you better let us play, man. He's like, no, we were like, you better let us play, man. Same, Then we sneaked on, sort of, and done four songs. And then, that was before the club had even opened. There was a couple of people hanging about. McGee was one of them. And it just hit him, man, or whatever. Don't know.
That's the stuff of sort of fairy tales, though, really, isn't it?
It's the truth, and no one believes us.
And it's funny, James, you think back to that time, it's kind of forgotten sometimes, but, doing interviews on television and radio for alternative indie bands, whatever you want to call them, it still wasn't... I'm not sure if it still is now, actually, if the truth be told, but it a lot of bands didn't enjoy that what they had to do in a way, really. Whereas Noel and Liam, you could see, were in their element. They were absolute naturals. And when I think back to that to that interview, my memory is that Noel couldn't really get a word in, because Liam's just in his absolute element, as I said, and ridiculously young. I mean, how old would he have been then, James?
21, yeah.
And but Noel, was what, 3-4 years older. It's funny, when I kind of sort of think back to that interview, I can't help but sort of think about the famous quote that George Martin always said about you know, the Beatles, when he was asked whether, you know, what, why he signed them. And he said that, you know, he enjoyed being around them almost as much as the music. And that, I think, you know, I know it's easy to say it with hindsight, but, you know, at the time, they were such a breath of fresh air, you know, whereas bands kind of previous, not all of them, you know, you would get exceptions, but a lot of bands, you know, it was kind of like pulling teeth interview. You know, you could almost feel their pain, you know, in having to do an interview, whether it be for radio or for television. But that couldn't be said for Noel and Liam. You know, they absolutely, you know, loved you know, being in front of the camera, you know, taking the piss out of the presenter, and you know, that's what kind of, you know, listen, the music was equally as as exciting, but you know, that side of things, you know, you cannot underestimate, you know, just how sort of how different they were to most at the time, really. Yeah. You know, there's a magazine front cover that I always remember. I think it was the Face magazine, James, where it said Oasis, the Sex Beatles.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, sort of thinking at the time that was kind of like an apt sort of description, really, because they kind of had that kind of punky sort of liveliness to them, but you know, they had these you know, these kind of equally great songs that you know, would go on to endure.
I mean, what was your reaction to signing to Creation? I mean, you know, Liam, you said you didn't really know that much about the label.
Yeah, I didn't, but then when I found out who, you know, what was on it, I'm like, I'm not saying anything on it, it's good, except for maybe the Scream, and I'm not saying anything, you know what I mean, whatever. And I thought, well, yeah, it's the right kind of label for us, you know what I mean?
I mean, could you believe, though, that in a way that it was so easy? I mean, I'm sure there's probably a lot of, you know, people watching this who are in bands who have been, you know, banging out the tapes to record companies for years.
It's not easy. And, like, people go, oh, yeah, well, I'm... It's not, you know, easy. Someone asked me, how did we go about and get this deal? And we didn't go out anyway. It was just one of them things. And we're lucky enough that it happened. Hurrah! You know what I mean?
Anyway, can I say something now?
You know,
my name's Noel.
One of them things.
I write all the songs.
You know, you walk down the road, you trip over, you break your leg, and you're gutted. You know, it's one of them things.
Or
like
somebody breaks
what, we do a gig for four, you know, do four songs, and he comes up and takes us away. I'm after it all. I want to be a star. You know, but not. You know the score. I'm after it. I want to be in a.
I'm before it.
I want to be in a, like a. I don't know.
When you say you want to be a star, I mean, you know, I don't what want to be like star. No, I don't want to be a big star.
Yeah, the big, nice star, yeah. That's what I want to be. I want to be myself. Find it hard sometimes, but, you know, get there. That's it.
Now,
make loads of money and all that, tackle and have a big house somewhere and all that, you know, and that's about it.
Preferably not anywhere near my big house.
Yeah, next door, matey.
No chance.
And what I love about that interview, like you said, because Liam, after a while, you know, Liam was not doing many interviews at all. It was all Noel, really. You know, and it was only, and I think they could tell that, you know, if you wanted I suppose Liam would often swear as well, so it was tricky, but Noel ended up doing the majority of that stuff. And then obviously he could then go into radio studios and do amazing acoustic versions of things, which then created this whole bootleg thing, which obviously we can come on to. But that's what I love about that interview, is such a time capsule where you've got Liam so confident and Noel so quiet, and Noel just trying to get a word in, but he doesn't want to talk over him and it become a big thing. But you know, Liam's just so buzzing and excited, you know, and it's just so infectious that, like, you can't help but smile watching it.
It really has stood the test of time. You know, I remember, you know, kind of liking them, and you know, as I said, you know, there was a little bit of an edge, that there was an edge to them, and again, James, a vivid memory They were playing that night at the Marquee. You know, it had moved to the Charing Cross Road then from the premises, you know, the legendary ones on Wardour Street. And I can remember after the interview, Noel sort of saying to me, Gary, are you coming to see us this evening? And I said, look, no, I've, you know, because what one of the things about the programme, James, was that it was a magazine programme. So I had to go and see films as well. Not that that was, you know, something that I didn't want to do. I love movies. It runs music a very, very close second. But I said, no, I've got to go and see a film this evening. He said, you should come tonight. You should come. He said, I'll put you on the door. And I said, well, look, listen, I've got to go and see this film and then I'll come down afterwards. And I remember the film that I went to see, James, was Shopping. Remember that film and Sadie Frost? And I used to joke about how they should have renamed it Shocking because it wasn't that good. But it's about Ram Raiders, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But I literally got about 15 minutes, through the film, and I thought, "Fuck this! I'm going to head over to the Marquee." Didn't have far to go because the film screening cinema was in Soho. And do you know what, James? It was one of the best decisions that I made, that day, that night, that week, that year, because I remember walking in there on my own. And you just sort of felt this, this kind of buzz, this, this kind of palpable sort of atmosphere that something was happening, something was kind of going, was evolving, if you like. And I can remember going upstairs because you couldn't get in downstairs. It was so packed in there and kind of watching from upstairs. And, finding a couple of pals of mine up there as well, bumping into them and just, being able to sort of, kind of survey the scene and just take it all in. You know, I don't know what your take on Oasis in concert is, but I always sort of felt, the many times that I saw them, if the audience were up for it, then the band were up for it. Sure. And, that kind of sort of sometimes tension, really, that was going back and forwards from the stage to the audience. That's what sort of helped to, to kind of make it, something very, very special. And my sort of best memories of seeing the band live are, those times when, that electricity seemed to be sort of cranked up and it almost sort of felt as though, it might kick off at some point. But it just made for sort of something, very, 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 very exciting. And, so my favourite memories of going to see the band live, that one at the Marquee, sort of early doors, relatively early doors, I guess. And I'm just sort of trying to, and of course, Earl's Court Arena, I think I went to two of those. That was very, very exciting. And I've got very, very fond memories, going a few years sort of further ahead to when Heathen Chemistry came out and they did the three shows at Finsbury Park.
Yeah.
Because I was very lucky, they asked me to DJ at those. And I think, if I remember correctly, Friday and Saturday, I absolutely fucking chucked it down. Excuse my French. I'd been thrown everywhere and there's bottles of piss and all the rest of it. But the performances were, were so, so electric. And the Sunday was really good. I've got a memory of the Sunday, the weather being a lot better as well. So I say, we will find.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, you've been very lucky to have them into the radio studio a few times, including, you know, Noel coming in and playing acoustic. I mean, that must be a very special thing to be in the presence of Noel coming in and playing, you know, Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, songs like that.
Yeah, I mean, so we did them. We did them first time in that guitar shop on Denmark Street, and then, I mean, you know, you'll know this, James. Obviously, it exploded. It exploded so quickly. You know, I mean, I'm trying to sort of remember, trying to think of another example of a band and an artist sort of, you know, getting so, you know, so big, so quickly, that the excitement about this group. You know, I mean, I was too young to kind of miss the Beatles. I mean, I adore the Beatles. I mean, I got into the Beatles, you know, just before punk and everything became about, you know, about the Beatles. But, you know, I'm trying to sort of think of a band whose rise was just so quick. You know, it was so exciting. It's funny, I met a girlfriend of mine an ex-girlfriend of mine for a drink last week, and we were talking about this particular weekend where we'd gone down to Brighton and then to Worthing to see her parents. And I don't think it had come out, but you know, Dylan White, who was the band's radio promotions guy, had given me an advance cassette, and we just played that cassette for that whole weekend. You know, whenever we were in the car, and it was cassettes then as well, James, that's how far back. But it just, you know, it just captured, you know, it just captured that sort of special time. And I mean, listen, you know, again, stating the obvious, it's such a great album. But yeah, you know, so we did them very early on in the record shop, and then of course, you know, we wanted to get them back on, and it had happened so quickly. I mean, you know, literally in the space of a few months, a year, and then they were doing, what was it, two or three nights at the Earls Court Arena. Yes, but again, you know, the reaction was kind of immediate. And you know, they were playing here, there, and everywhere, and you know, not just in the UK, but the rest of the world were kind of playing catch up. But we were really, really lucky. You know, Noel said yes to kind of coming in, and in a sense, in a way, really, James, I think both of them, I hope so, can't speak for them, but I think that they enjoyed, you know, being interviewed by me. You know, they knew that I was I was a fan, and you know, I think I hope that they sort of knew that, you know, I was, you know, able to be relied on to sort of, you know, to do my, you know, homework and sort of hopefully come up with a, you know, some interesting questions. So we were lucky. So we were able, James, to kind of kill two birds with one stone. So Noel came in with his guitar, and we basically recorded, well, it went out live, an hour interview where he was choosing some of his favourite tracks, and he also nipped downstairs and performed two, three acoustic songs. And, you know, my memory is that it was Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, and also a fantastic version of John Lennon's You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. So, you know, the beat was there, you know, our lovely director, Jackie Eden-Brow, with a cameraman and a sound guy. And, you know, she filmed it. And it was also going out on GLR. So, you know, two birds killed with one stone, so to speak.
And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead the way are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how, I don't know how. But maybe you're gonna be the one that saves me.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, Noel was in fantastic form, you know, that night. I mean, you know, me and a pal of mine, I think you've had Simon Halfon on your podcast, but me and Simon sort of joke that, you know, if the music, you know, never worked out for Noel, he would be, you know, one of the great after dinner speakers, really, because he's got such a, you know, kind of lovely, fast, you know, wit, that I mean, again, you know, I think he you know, he was really, really enjoying it, and I think he sort of also you know, knew that he could run rings around me.
Well, yeah, he must have liked you, Gary, because you ended up doing stuff for Oasis iNet, so the Oasis website, and then also for Pretty Green as well. So it seems like, you know, when the guys knew they had to turn to someone, that they would tend to come to you.
Well, so many memories. Yes, you're right. I've got a memory of doing one of the, I think it was one of the first kind of live internet kind of interviews, really, with Noel in a hotel over by Hyde Park. That was fun. That was really enjoyable. You know, in fact, you know, it's funny because I've still got a lot of VHSs scattered around my flat of you know, interviews that I've done with the band over the years. But I don't have a copy of that. I wonder if there's one, you know, that's out there. But we were asking questions that people would have emailed in, you know, back in the day. I mean, another very, very fond memory is interviewing them, going up to Wheeler End and interviewing them for around just before the release of the Heathen Chemistry album. And that was a really, really enjoyable day, you know, with Noel and Liam and Gem and Andy as well. I think I've got a VHS of that sort of somewhere in the flat. But like you said, you know, the great thing, James, was that I think if they sort of knew that you'd kind of done your homework and that, you know, that you were into it, you know, that they would, you know, I'm not saying they would be putty in your hands, because it could always, you know, you could never really relax, you know, you're sort of buttock clenching time, really, but nothing awful. Sort of, you know, I can't remember it ever sort of turning, you know, sort of unpleasant or anything. It was always good. And like a, you know, like I said, that at the time, you know, so many bands, you know, when I think back to that kind of period, you could tell that it was painful for them to be in front of either a camera or a microphone and having to talk about their music. I mean, much as I love, you know, Blur and you know, they've given us some great music over the years, you know, stating the obvious, but Damon and Graham, you know, used to really, you know, you could tell that they, you know, that they would have been, they would rather have been anywhere else rather than having sort of asked questions. You know, I think we got away with it over the years, but it was you know, it wasn't something that they enjoyed. Whereas, you know, especially Noel and Liam, it's funny because I don't have a memory of ever interviewing, you know, Bonehead or Grigsby. I don't have a memory of you know, the boys, you know, ever being at an interview. It was always kind of Noel and Liam or Noel on his own or Liam on his own as well. Did a fair few times over the years. I remember being asked to interview, you know, Liam for, you know, his contribution to a Channel 4 night called Shine On, where they were paying tribute. It was a big anniversary of the passing of John Lennon. And I can remember the production company saying that, oh, Liam's asked for you to come and, you know, be the interviewer and going up to, you know, to Air Studios and, you know, asking the questions for that. And listen, I can talk about John Lennon until I come home. So that was a lovely memory.
He was great, and that is it. He just bends my head completely. And personally, you know, he's the alphabet to me, you know what I mean? He's a language, you know what I mean? You know, he's like the reason why I put a foot forward and a foot back. It's why I take a left and I take a right. And that is it, you know what I mean? And his music's good. It's alright. He doesn't take a rocket scientist to find, you know, what, you know, it is, you know, he's not just a musician to me, he's like the big brother, you know what I mean? It was the ultimate rock and roll star. He went, you know, back the other way, you know what I mean? And I love that geeky look, you know what I mean? Like, everyone goes about Keith Richards being the ultimate rock and roll star because he looked sweaty and he had, like, this punky haircut and, like, he played guitar. It seems like he'd get a slap off Keith Richards, you know what I mean? But imagine getting a bigger slap off John Lennon with a guy in a white suit and print soles, you know what I mean? A fucking pair of round glasses, man. I'd take a slap off Keith Richards any day. Turn the lights off, man, have a listen.
You know, Gary, thanks so much for your time. It's really, really appreciated.
Okay, listen, you. Thank you so much for having me, James. I really, really enjoyed that.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Top man Gary is. Make sure you do check out that CD because it's absolutely fantastic. Like I was saying there, there's some amazing tunes on there. Some of them I'd never heard before. Some of them I remembered from like the evening session and stuff. So yeah, really, really good mix of songs. Definitely check it out. And yeah, and you get a lovely booklet and the physical CD. It's a magical thing to behold. One more thing. You know, I like to get audio messages from you guys, and we've had one in from Gary from Stockport.
Hello, James. I just wanted to say that the Oasis podcast is my favourite podcast of all the ones that I listen to. Thanks in no small part to yourself as host. Your great knowledge about the band and all things related to music. I think I could listen to you talk about anything and you would make it sound good. You've great rapport with your guests, no matter who they are, and I think Noel is definitely missing a trick not doing an interview with you. You put me onto several books, such as Tony McCarroll's, and some other podcasts, such as The Stage Left and Movie Multiverse. I should probably tell you about my Oasis experience. Obviously a huge part of my teenage years. The first three albums are difficult to beat. The later ones are good, but I don't have the same affection for them. I saw Oasis once in 2009 at Heaton Park, and then I saw Liam earlier this year at the Etihad. I've still not seen Noel. Hopefully that will change soon. Anyway, keep up the great work and I will keep on listening.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Gary. Much appreciated. Thanks so much for getting in touch. I love the fact that, you know, books and podcasts and other things that that we've talked about on here that then people can pick up and get into. So, you know, so that's really cool if we've been able to sort of, introduce some other things to you. That's much appreciated. And thank you for the kind comments about me. I kind of, you know, I just try to like shut up and let people talk, which is something that other podcasters don't seem to do very much. But there we go. Anyway, that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post extra bits and we just have some fun and games on the Discord. We're actually just doing a kind of World Cup sweepstake on the Discord at the moment, so we'll see who wins that. There's posting a couple of bonus episodes going up there, and all of the episodes always go up there a day or two early. So if you want to be the first to hear them, then that's where to check that out. Feel free to drop me an email, oasispod@gmail.com, and do follow on social media everywhere you can. Give the YouTube a follow. I just uploaded actually a message for the Britpop Revival show because they've just celebrated their 10 years. And something I did there is I'd requested the song The Man Don't Give a Fuck by the Super Furry Animals as a joke, because obviously it's a proper radio show, they can't play it. But what I decided to do was do an edited version where I've added in sort of little sound effects and stuff over each F word. So that's quite funny. So that is up on my YouTube channel right now. So go and check that out. Good. I think that will do it. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.